Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
All right. Welcome everyone here to The Thriving Marriage. Grateful to have you and hope that you are doing well. I'm Heather Choate. I'm with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Good. We're surviving May Madness. We talked about that a little bit last week, all the craziness this time of year. We've got graduation parties. We've got school ending. Kids are going bonkers. And then there's still a lot of challenges that a lot of people are facing as well. So today we're going to be talking about ways you can build trust in your relationship. For those that joined us last week, we were talking about how to change the narrative. If you're really familiar with our PATH process, you know how important it is to uncover the narrative, right? To help your spouse want to come back to you. And we decided a really good follow-up for that would be to really show how to build that trust, because until they trust you and you trust yourself and you trust them, then we're really building on a sandy foundation. So we want to make sure we're building on a strong foundation so that they trust that new story about you and you do as well. Before we get into that though, we're going to share a client win of the week. And this one comes it comes with permission.
You know what you mean.
From Nicole. So thanks for posting this, Nicole, in our Thriving Marriage group. Mark, you good if I share this one?
Yeah, I was actually really excited to see this. Nicole is someone that I've worked with directly. And so, I saw the date, so it's very recent. I was like, oh, hey, great. Like, it's always good to see people that I've worked with kind of pop up in the group and share wins like this. So, but go ahead.
You shared it like 5 days ago as of the recording of this podcast. So that's pretty cool.
you said you were going to share, or was
So she says, I haven't seen a lot of wins lately and no wins shared by other standers, I guess, gave me the courage.
I think standers as in people who stand for their marriages, I think what she's using the term for.
Got it. Give me the courage and strength to stand for my marriage when I struggled. So I'm going to share some encouragement. Memorial Day 2020, so almost a year ago, my husband said he was done. We were going to be divorced and no one would change his mind. He loved me, but wasn't in love with me. He filed in July. I started the PATH program and one-on-one coaching with High Thrive. I joined a Bible study and took my trials to God. There were days I wanted to just walk away. I was tired. I kept with it though. I studied PATH over and over again, driven on direction from my coach. It is work, but worth it. And the wins. I'm a happier person. My husband's desire to be with me is coming back. Not only did I learn to be a better listener, he is now listening to me. He is interested in my day. We're moving, and last night he made the comment, "You should have bought that house." I lovingly called him out and said, "Am I still buying a house, or are we doing this together?" His response was, "We." He still hasn't said, "I love you," but I see the change and pray it's only time. So be encouraged. Listen to the coaches. Follow the program steps. Listen to the training again and again. It works. Hats off to High Thrive. You taught me to be a loving and desirable wife. And thanks be to God, none of this would be without him.
Yeah, I'm just, like I said, I'm really glad to see things like this. I know Nicole has worked really hard, and it was really interesting watching this transformation, like where she's saying that she's a happier person. I could absolutely see that over time, where it went from, okay, like here is this monumental problem, to like, okay, I'm okay, and I can handle this, and I can be okay no matter what happens, but I'm going to stand for my marriage, as she's putting it. So once again, like it's great being able to see something like this.
Yeah, you know, Mark and we take a, I don't know if you call it a scientific approach, but it's definitely a systematic approach to a relationship. And we look for certain markers to see that a relationship is heading in a healthy direction. And we can see right here that she was learning to be a better listener. First of all, she was just happy, which is just awesome. Like, it's just a better way to be. And it's a lot more attractive when we're just happy, no matter what happens, right? And then learn to be a better listener. He is now listening to me. So that would be that second step there of really getting communication open, where it's safe, it's secure, you're able to talk about things respectfully and have that understanding between you. He said, she also says he is interested in my day. And so now, not only is it just respectful, but he's actually showing interest and engaging, and they're building that connection. And she says she hasn't heard the words "I love you" yet, but she knows that they're heading in that direction. And they will, because we can see those mile markers, those little milestones, as they're passing through these different ones, and they follow the path process, we'll get them there. So that's awesome. All right. So today we're talking about trust, which I'm sure is a big part of what Nicole used here as well, to help her husband see that the changes that she was making were real, and that he could let go of his story about her and believe that they could be happy together, right? Now they're wanting to have a house together and a life together again, which is really good. So, Mark, we always kind of start with the same format here, but we always want to make sure we're clear on what we're talking about and everyone's on the same page, because sometimes the same word means different things to different people. So what does trust mean here in relationships?
Yeah, you know, as I was putting this together, I was like, do I even really need to define this? But I thought probably should, because I think I want to make some distinctions here in terms of what we're talking about in terms of trust. So trust, you know, if we just go into the definition, you know, we just Google it, it's belief in the reliability of something or someone. Simple definition. Now, what I wanted to talk about here, though, is a lot of people say, okay, I don't have trust in my relationship. And I want to make this point that trust is not just like a single thing. It's not like you have it or you don't. It's not just, you know, I look at it almost like a, you know, some things are a spectrum, but trust is that, but it's not just one single spectrum. It's not like, okay, we have trust or it doesn't exist at all. It's like, for instance, you might have trust, your spouse might trust you to be on time. You know, you're going to be reliable for that, but they might not trust you to be respectful. They might trust you to be very kind, but maybe not that you're going to be proactive in solving the concerns that they have. And so we have trust in a lot of different things. You know, my wife and I, we are always working on ourselves and on the relationship. And, you know, even us, there's some things that we have a high amount of trust in and some things that we need to work on. But that's just going to be any relationship. Now, why we're talking about this is, you know, Heather, you mentioned last week, we're talking about this shifting the narrative. And I'm of the belief that, okay, in a failing relationship, there's always going to be a lack of trust somewhere. It's going to be kind of at the heart of things. You know, if you've gotten to this point where your spouse does not believe that things can get better, I mean, you hear that, like, here's this, there's not a belief in reliability. Well, if they don't trust that they won't be hurt or that they can feel fulfilled, that's usually the thing that kind of pushes this along and pushes it past that breaking point where we say, okay, enough's enough and I'm done. So that's why we're talking about this, is because it's such a critical thing. But just to tie it back to last week's discussion, we made the point that you can't really shift a narrative. You can't convince your spouse to believe differently about the relationship or about any specific thing if they don't trust you. So here we are with our discussion today.
Very good. So, and for those that are watching live, if you don't know, if you're listening to the recording, we always stream these live into our Thriving Marriage Facebook group. Welcome to those who are watching live. And go ahead and let us know, what is your spouse maybe distrustful of you? What trust issues are going on in your marriage? Sometimes when we think about trust issues, we think about like an affair, like they totally broke your trust. And they broke vows and these kind of things. But like Mark said here, there is going to be an underlying element of distrust in all the different situations. If your spouse is wanting out, if your relationship is failing in some area, then there's that lack of trust that things are going to be better. You know, things that I can trust you with my feelings, or that you're going to be there for me, right? Or that this is going to work out. And so that's definitely something that we want to address. So Mark, what are some elements of creating trust? So if we like, okay, I recognize that we've got some distrust in these different areas. How do we start to build that trust again? Especially if my spouse says, I want out, there's nothing you can do. Kind of like Nicole was saying at the beginning, where they were a year ago.
I think this comment that just popped up from Celeste is she's saying that she doesn't, you know, part of the problem in their relationship is she doesn't trust him around other people. She's saying it's getting better. And I do want to, you know, I'll admit that as I was writing this, I was coming at it from the perspective of, okay, people who are listening to this are the ones trying to fix problems, are the ones trying to fix the marriage, and the spouse is the one that is lacking trust. But it can absolutely go the other way around. And so I'm just going to make a mental note to kind of address both sides as we go about this. But yeah, we're going to talk about four different elements for creating trust. I don't think this is an exhaustive list, but I think it's a good place to start. And I always think that it's a really great idea if you're really lacking trust, that you get some feedback from a professional to kind of examine these sort of things. But the four things that we want to talk about today are consistency, confidence, vulnerability, and safety. I think it's a good list, good place to start, right, in terms of building trust. So we're going to go through the list. If you guys have comments on any of these, if you want to join in the discussion, let us know. We see the comments. So starting off with consistency, and I'm going to say something odd here, Heather. I'm going to say you can build consistency perhaps even without being 100% consistent, which sounds odd. But here's the thing. Like I run into my clients and they're saying, well, you know, I'm working on this thing. I'm trying to solve whatever problem may be, but I, you know, there's setbacks. How do I build trust? Like, what do I do about this? And I slow them down. I say, okay, hold on a moment. It's okay. You're not expected to be perfect. And this is the thing. We want to build consistency, but it's much more important. I have found it is much more important to if you recognize the problem and address it after the mistake, like rather than being 100% perfect. So let's pretend that the problem is something like anger, Heather. You lose your temper. That's going to happen. You're trying to maybe control anger. You lose your temper. Where damage often happens is not just because there's anger. It's because that, you know, maybe that angry outburst is never addressed after the fact, after everyone cools off and said, you know, no one says, you know what, sorry, and I'm going to handle it this way and things are going to be better. And, you know, I'm going to make up to it by doing this, whatever it happens to be, to actually give some reassurance. And in my opinion, as long as you can at least be consistent after the fact, you know, obviously you don't want to just be always apologizing, but if you can be consistent after the fact and you can actually recognize the problems and address them, I often see that that's just as good. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that, Heather? I imagine there's probably some apologies here and there in your life with Ben.
Yeah. So it's one thing
I lost you just for a second there, just as you were starting. Oh no. I could see like her connection was fine for like the entire podcast. And as soon as I'm asking her a question, it looks like her connection is out. Let's see. So I will instead, you know, I can talk about this myself. So in terms of this sort of thing, my opinion is that, do we have Heather back? Had some feedback. But you know, like we all have some sort of vulnerabilities. Heather, I think I'm hearing some echo from you. Sorry, everyone. This is the fun of doing a live broadcast. Anyways, I'll try to power through. So with Jennifer, you know, everyone has some vulnerabilities. Like, I'll just be open here. So I have some sensitive, I really need that kind of one-on-one time with Jen to feel secure in the relationship. And I get, you know, and if I'm feeling a little wilty, if I'm feeling sad, I can talk to her and I get what I need. But, you know, occasionally because of vulnerabilities like that, because of sensitivities like that, I will sometimes perceive things and it's not quite accurate. Like I might perceive some rejection when it's not quite there. And Jen and I are always consistent then about bringing these things up after the fact, about addressing the problems afterward. Or, you know, Jen might have some sensitivities around receiving feedback and not feeling good enough. And so what happens here is when the problem comes up and we've recognized that a problem has occurred, we've both cooled off, we then come back together and we say, okay, hey, you know what? This is important to me. I want to hear your concern. And we start applying some of these other elements that we're going to be discussing further, like elements of being able to be vulnerable, being able to be confident, being able to create some safe situations. But the fact that we are not perfect all the time, Jen and I, is fine because after the fact, we revisit the problem and we handle it at that point. And that's what I'm saying here is, that's all that you guys need. Now, in order to be consistent, though, and this is something that Jen and I have worked on a whole lot, is if we are going to be consistent, we have to have a clear objective of what we're actually trying to accomplish. So it's been important for Jen and I to create an atmosphere where we can be open with each other, that we can share our feelings, we can share our thoughts, our concerns. That's our goal and what we try to build trust on. But if all you're doing is saying, hey, we just kind of need to build trust, and you don't really have anything in mind there, it's going to be very difficult to be consistent with it. So you need to, you know, keep your ear out and make sure that you're listening into what the concerns are in the relationship, what the complaints are from your spouse, any, you know, the really big sensitive areas that you have yourself. And you need to identify, okay, where are the areas that we need to build trust? I can think of, for some, you know, I'm thinking of a client that I've worked with recently whose husband was feeling really rejected. He felt like his wife, my client, didn't care about him, didn't really love him, was like talking about him behind his back or something. There's some concerns there that weren't really all the way accurate, but we kind of identified this goal in terms of building trust and saying, okay, we want to make sure that your husband feels reassured, that he feels like you care. And so we had to develop some messages to be consistent on that. So in terms of consistency, what I'm, like I said, to reiterate, you don't need to be perfect. Make sure that you always come back to it, the problems though, and to make sure that you clearly identify what you're trying to build trust on in order for you to be consistent on that. The second element that I think is you all need to focus in on is that confidence aspect. And why is this important? Because confidence is really about trust in yourself. And the thing is, if your spouse they're not going to have trust in you if you don't have trust in yourself. I'll give an example. This is a more minor example, but so my wife and I, we've been seeing our own life coach recently. We've been wanting to accomplish some goals because, you know, a lot of time, you know, like many people, we have set goals and then we just kind of let them slide. You know, everyone know has those New Year's resolutions that they say, okay, I'm going to accomplish this big thing, and then whatever happens. So we got we have this life coach here, and you know, I thought it was a really kind of an interesting lesson that we took away from this in terms of building goals, is we were really trying to build up our own confidence and our ability to follow through with those goals. And I noticed that the more confident my wife was in herself in accomplishing these goals, things like even basic things like getting to the gym, the easier it was for me to support her in those goals, and the more trust that I had in her that I could push her on that, the more that I could rely on her to follow through with some of these goals. A lot of that trust came from her own, you know, like a lot of my trust in my wife came from her own confidence in herself. So the thing is, if you're hesitant in your ability to make changes, how can your spouse trust you? If your spouse, now, and I'm going to, like you might say, okay, of course I'm confident, but if your spouse expresses this doubt and you get angry, defensive, sad, you start to fight back against them, you are really not expressing confidence in your ability to address the problems presented to you. And so sometimes this, you know, the lack of confidence that they perceive can be a subtle thing. You might not recognize it for what it is. And so this is where this kind of, you know, we call you on this a little bit, and where you need to examine yourself. But I was just discussing how I think a lot of people feel like they're confident in their own changes, but I think that they demonstrate a lack of this confidence when, you know, their spouse comes to them with problems and they present defensiveness or anger or sadness. And I think that really can deteriorate this idea that, okay, my spouse is confident in their ability to make changes. You get what I mean by that, Heather? I'm wondering if anyone gets what I mean. If we're talking about, you know, a hypothetical problem of like handling anger, and my wife came to me and said, you know, it's been a long time, I'm not really sure that you're going to be able to do this, and I get really upset with her, or I get really sad about this, it's going to really detract from her ability to trust me, because I'm not really handling that situation well. I'm not really confident enough in my own ability to change to be able to withstand that feedback.
Right.
That was kind of this point that I make. I'm calling it out that I think a lot of times people might present a lack of confidence without actually knowing it.
Right. And those triggers kind of put us back into our old patterns and our old behaviors. So just being really aware of those. One thing that's helped me with this, because I think if all of us just took a step back, we'd realize there's things that we are confident about in ourselves, things that we do trust ourselves about. I can trust myself. I'm going to brush my teeth every evening before bed. For me, that's not a place I'm going to, you know, not follow through on. But there's other areas in all of our lives where we've said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make this change. And then we didn't do it. And we have a lack of confidence there and trust in ourselves. And then when other people bring us those triggers back, then it's easy just to give up and say, oh yeah, I see. It's really not working. I'm really not changing, and to kind of get back into the old patterns. I was thinking about this just today while I was running on the treadmill, and I was thinking how powerful it would be, because I've been talking to several people in my life personally that are struggling with confidence in themselves, struggling with trusting themselves, because they've broken promises to themselves over and over and over again, and they've broken promises to others. And really, until you trust yourself, then other people can't trust you, because again, we don't have that sure foundation within us. So we really need to build that trust in ourselves first. And I was thinking, how powerful would it be if we would just say for 90 days, I'm going to do one thing every day. So look at an area of your life maybe that you don't have as much confidence in, or you know you've broken promises to yourself in the past, but it really matters to you. And then what would be one simple action you could take for 90 days that would help you regain that confidence in yourself? And it's through those little tiny steps, those little tiny things. I'm talking about a really, really small action, not a big action. Like if you're trying to change your health, maybe it's that you drink a glass of water when you first get up in the morning, or that you go on a 10-minute walk. If you're working on your spirituality, maybe it's that you journal for 5 minutes or you meditate for 10 minutes. If you're working on being more grateful, you stop and think about 5 things at the end of the day you could be grateful for, right? Whatever that little habit is that would help move you more in that direction, as you start to do those things, that gives your brain evidence that you are changing, and that will help you start to build that confidence in yourself. And like Mark said at the beginning, it's about consistency. It's not about perfection. It is about progress. And it's about knowing that we're going to fail, knowing that we are going to backtrack, that we're never going to get it completely right every single time, but it's part of the process. I think that's one thing I really love about the way that we approach helping people with their relationships, Mark, is that we never expect perfection. In fact, we actually plan on when you fail, because we all fail. And the fear of failure keeps a lot of people from even trying, because, you know, it's easier to not try than to fail, but then you actually end up failing by default. So just something to think about.
Good question. And I want to pose this, you know, to us, but also if audience wants to chime in, like, how do you show confidence around difficult subjects in your own marriage? So if you have something like some idea, anyone in the audience, that, you know, some way to really show that confidence around difficult subjects, put in the comments. But I was thinking about this, you know, myself and my marriage with Jen, and we, you know, in terms of like showing this confidence, I know, like if Jen is having a hard time and she's saying, okay, like things aren't going well, and maybe she's feeling like, you know, she's told me it's fine to talk about these sort of things, but she's often talked about not feeling good enough. This is a subject that I can feel a lot of confidence in, and I can say, okay, I know I can support Jen in this, and I can, and so I can go in there and I can really give a confident message and be like, okay, Jen, is that, you know, and I can ask her questions like, is that accurate? And I can show some evidence that it's not accurate, and we can talk about it. But part of the big thing, like demonstrating confidence in there, is I'm not really, you know, I'm there to hear her concern and I can calmly direct her toward in a better direction. And so I think like a big part of where Jen and I do well with this is that we kind of know where some things are vulnerable, and we know where our own strengths are. And we, even if we meet some resistance, we know when to push through that resistance to support each other. And I think it's something that can be applied in other people's marriages is, okay, if you want to, you know, if you really want to demonstrate this confidence, you need to like know where are your actual strengths? Where can you actually push back against some of the complaints in a calm and loving way? And I think that is a very subtle way to show confidence around some difficult things, perhaps, you know, some problems in your own relationship, is knowing when to gently push past some of that resistance and say, hey, you know what? That's not accurate. This is, you know, let's actually talk about this a little bit.
Right. And when you do it in that way, it comes from a state of genuineness, mm-hmm. which comes from inside. And so if you don't feel that right now, know that, you know, those are the things that you can work on to have more trust and confidence in yourself, so that then that can be conveyed in a very genuine way to your partner, and they will sense it. So one thing we don't like is a lot of gimmicky stuff, right? A lot of mind tricks or hacks. I mean, they seem very appealing, but they're very surface level, and they don't really create lasting change. And we always want to create lasting change addressing these root issues. And to address the root issues, you need to get to that place of quiet confidence. And again, it's not going to be perfect, but there's this internal shift that happens. And Mark and I have seen it now with hundreds and hundreds of our students that went from a place of being very insecure, feeling like other people needed to make them happy or the marriage needed to make them happy or whatever. Like a lot of us look to external things for those feelings, and shifting that to finding that it's all within us and living from that state, that gives you that confidence to handle those tricky, you know, subjects or, you know, addressing those root issues so that they can be healed. And when you do that from that state, it's not pushy. It's not volatile, right? It's not victim. It's very confident and calm, and it is attractive. It attracts the things that you want to you. And so that's really important. Now, a huge element of trust is vulnerability. This is something we talk about a lot with intimacy, and because intimacy is kind of a offshoot of trust, being open and having that deeper connection requires vulnerability. And this is the hard part, because vulnerability is the last thing you want to do when you feel insecure, which is why we're talking about creating inner confidence, so that then you can put down the defense mechanisms and have a bit of vulnerability. So Mark, what is this vulnerability, and why is it so important to really rebuilding trust here?
So part of like the, what can pull away from trust is kind of this like a fake or disingenuous sort of approach to problems. If the problem is like a drinking problem and you're spouse is complaining, you know, about how heavy, like they're saying, hey, you're this alcoholic, you're never going to stop drinking, all whatever. And you go in there and you minimize the problem and you sugarcoat the problem. It's really disingenuous, and it diminishes trust because you're not actually being vulnerable with the real struggles that exist. As opposed to, you know, an approach where, like, once again, if it was a drinking problem, you say, you know what, this is, you know, honestly a very difficult thing for me. And, you know, and you go into like why it's difficult and some of the struggles that surround the drinking problem and maybe what contributes to wanting to drink more. This is a very vulnerable sort of state and really demonstrates that you're giving it a lot of thought. That you're being very open about it. The people who are not ready to change are going to be very closed. They're not going to be very open. They're going to deny and minimize their problem, which is actually, if you go into 12-step programs, this is one of the reasons why I'm a little bit rusty on this. It's been a while since I used to take people to 12-step programs as part of like some treatment program. But I believe the first step is admitting powerlessness or being vulnerable about your problem. And I think the correct approach, if you're really trying to build up your relationship in terms of being vulnerable, is combining vulnerability with accountability. And it gives this perception of responsibility rather than weakness. So if you're saying, hey, this is a struggle I have, and I'm gonna hold myself responsible for it, and I'm going to actually take care of this. This is a vulnerable, responsible sort of position and can build trust. I'm going to flip that on its head, though, and say vulnerability also is very important in allowing your partner to be vulnerable while building trust. And certainly, you know, Jen and I, there's things that we have, problems that we've avoided and difficult discussions that we've avoided because we just didn't want to deal with them. And we've found that when we can be a little bit more open about our troubles and we can be there for each other, it's this huge, huge trust building sort of thing in our relationship, to the point where, there's nothing that I don't feel like I could be open with my wife at this point.
Right. We didn't always feel that way. At least I didn't always. And it was definitely a process of creating that vulnerability And we're going to go talk into safety next, because those are so interconnected there with rebuilding trust. But it's easier to say, you know, you did this, I'm mad at you because of this, and I am justified in the way I acted because of this, this, and this. And one thing I've really had to learn to do is be authentic to how I'm really feeling. Like, what is driving that anger? What was driving me to kind of lash out there? And when I'm really actually vulnerable with myself and with Ben, I'll be like, you know what? I'm actually really scared right now. Underneath all this anger and blaming you and everything is I'm scared. And here's why, whatever the situation might be, right? And we see our clients do this. They go from blaming the person or, you know, we have all these defense mechanisms that show up on the surface. But then when we actually are really vulnerable and say, you know, I'm really hurt. This really hurts me. And I would like to get to a place where we're healthy and we respect each other. Is that something you could help me with? Is that something we could work together on? Right? Then they, it's just like you pull all the layers back and you get to see each other for who you really are. And when someone's vulnerable like that, yes, you're putting yourself out there. There is risk, right? Because you could get crushed. But when you do it the right way, it's almost always going to lead to a higher reward than the risk, right? Because then they're going to share their selves authentically, and you're going to see what's really going on for them and why they're feeling the way they do and what's driving their behaviors. And then when you find out, okay, they're really just feeling alone. They're feeling completely abandoned right now. That might be what's driving them. And then you could be like, okay, how could I help you with that? How could I help you not feel so alone? How could we work together so that I don't feel scared and you don't feel alone, right? And then when you're like at that level, you can't help but have major breakthroughs because you're really seeing each other for who you are and having that compassion and that grace and teamwork. And as you are vulnerable, it allows them to be vulnerable as well. All right, so then that goes to our last little step here, which is safety, which is a need to, there needs to be an ability to express concerns, to express problems, to express these vulnerabilities that we were just talking about, right? And even joy, even happiness, even gratitude, and have that be heard. So it's kind of like the safety exercise, right? Or I'm going to jump, or are you going to catch me, right? Every time your partner jumps, or at least not perfectly every time, but more often than not, you need to be that safety net that's going to catch them and helps them see that, oh, I can open up to her and she's going to not lash out. Oh, I can, you know, have this healthy boundary with him and it's not going to backfire. So Mark, tell us a little bit more about safety and what we've seen with our clients.
Yeah. If you've watched us for a while, there's been times when we've talked about a cycle of trust. And this is basically how trust and intimacy build up is, someone extends some amount of vulnerability, that vulnerability is normalized and made to feel safe, and then you have an ability to be a little bit more vulnerable after that if you are on the cycle where trust is growing. Mm-hmm. Conversely, if vulnerability is extended, as in someone expresses some emotion, someone expresses some concerns, they something along those lines, and then that concern, that emotion, that whatever is diminished, it's not heard, it's made to feel unsafe, then we trust diminishes. And so this is a really important thing. And a lot of times as a expectations within a relationship shift, because maybe there's separation or there's, you know, maybe someone has expressed the desire to separate or divorce, there's a lot of opportunities for people to be vulnerable and express what they want or need, and then a lot of opportunities for that to not feel safe. I'm going to say, like, getting defensive, stonewalling, you know, I'm using those two, you know, those are really good examples. Those are also two of the four horsemen of divorce, according to Gottman. But yeah, getting defensive, stonewalling, becoming upset when your partner expresses concerns, it creates an unsafe environment to address problems. It diminishes trust because of that. And I liked your example, you know, Heather, the trust exercise, the fall exercises where you fall back and let someone catch you. Being able to express yourself is very much in line with that sort of idea. You kind of let yourself out there when you say, hey, this is a problem for me. You let yourself out there when you say, this is really upsetting to me. When you, that angry outburst that your spouse might have because they feel like you've wronged them in some way, oddly enough, is a vulnerable moment for them, even if they're not expressing it in a very healthy way. They're expressing some sort of emotion. And so as they open up in any way, if you follow that up with respect, with concern, with, you know, being able to receive that, you're building up this safety, you're building up trust. I do think that a lot of times people intend, they say, yeah, I listen well, and perhaps you do a good job. I do think that a lot of times some of this is on the other side, the person that's being vulnerable, and that they might be a little bit more sensitive to some amount of rejection. And that does happen as well. But I want to ask you, Heather, because I know we've talked about these sort of things in our own relationships. Like, I know how I handle this kind of idea of making things safe, even, you know, and I know I make things safe, even though Jen might not always perceive it. But, like, how do you and Ben navigate that?
So you're saying, like, if I'm doing everything I can to try to show him that it's safe to open up, but he still perceives rejection?
Yeah. I mean, does that ever happen? Anything along those lines? Like, you feel like you're doing everything just fine, and Ben or you might perceive otherwise.
Right. No, it does, because we are human and we constantly bump into each other and misunderstand each other. I think I said a couple podcasts ago about how I opened up about a really rough day and then Ben just kind of went to bed and didn't talk at all. And I perceived that as rejection, whereas he thought he was helping me by not fueling into my victim story, right? And there's times too, I'm sure, I can't think of any right now, but it just comes again to being authentic and vulnerable. And if I had done everything I could, but he still perceived rejection, I would ask and I would apologize. That was not my intention, right? So how can I show you that I am a safe place? What would that look like to you, right? And I would want to get his perspective on that. And then that would help me better understand how I can show him that in the future. So if he says, you know, you still speak kind of loud and fast, and that makes me feel like you're not really listening and you're just trying to solve my problem. In fact, that's when he has said, okay, so there we go. So for him, it helps if I just close my mouth and listen. And when I talk, don't try to solve the problem, rather just support, right? And so that's what he said, helps him to feel like I'm listening and not just rejecting him when he's being vulnerable. I'm not trying to fix it, right? Sometimes we get into that pattern. So I think it's really listening to your partner when they say, you know, you really didn't, I still feel rejected. You got to get some clarity on why that is, and then build that understanding on how you can do it better in the future.
Now, and I don't want to get too far into this topic, but I do think this is related to what we call here with High Thrive Coaching, our home messages. Mm-hmm. Ben was perceiving that you weren't listening, even though you thought you were, but you kind of came back to this idea that, hey, I am listening, and you demonstrated it. You went far, you went further and said, okay, like, I'm not just saying that I'm trying to listen. I'm going to do something here, and I'm going to actually demonstrate that I am making this attempt. And I think that's really important as you are trying to build safety and as people are kind of hesitant around this and say, okay, hey, look, I am actually trying to listen here. Let's actually do something about it.
I like Nicole's comment here. She says, I finally figured out that sometimes walking away when he says, I don't want to talk, is building trust that I am listening. Right there, you are understanding what he's actually wanting and demonstrating that you're willing to respect that need that he has. And so, yeah, that is how you're helping build trust, because many times we see clients still plow ahead. You know, their spouse says, please don't text me, and you still text them. So is that showing respect, right? Is that helping them trust you that you're really there for them, right? It's the little things like that. That when they ask for something, they say, you know, now is not a good time to talk. I don't want to talk right now. Respecting that, like, you figured out here, Nicole, is showing them that you're willing to do those actions to show that you are trustworthy. So that's really good.
So I'm going to admit, like, I feel like we need to revisit this topic at some point. I'm going to point out that this is going to be the topic of our subscription material coming up here. You know, we release new in-depth trainings every month. They usually come out towards the beginning of the month. So this is, we're going to be taking this to a point where we're going to be giving you step-by-step kind of instructions on how to build this up from the ground up, as in, like, hey, there's no trust left and your spouse is hardly talking to you. Where do you start with that? So if you want, like, a little bit more of a in-depth guide, please check that out. Where do people sign up for that? That's on our website, right?
Yeah, highthrivecoaching.com. And what I really love about that, I mean, we talk about kind of a high-level overview here and explore a couple different tangents and how it applies to our relationship, which is good. But what we do in the training, in the subscription, is give you action steps and exercises that you can do that take it from, you know, maybe a philosophical idea to actual change that you're going to see in your life. So it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, the whole reason why we're talking about this so much today is, you know, trust, once again, has this huge, huge impact on the ability to shift the narrative. And if you are not taking action to build trust, your partner is not going to listen at all as you claim, hey, I'm changing, I'm making changes, things are going to be better, we can be happy. They're not going to trust that. They're not going to buy into that idea without the trust, I should say.
Yeah. And just future pace this a little bit. If you're feeling like, wow, we do have a lot of trust issues, I really want to feel secure, I want to feel safe, start with yourself, right? How can you feel safe and secure with yourself? And again, I encourage you guys to accept that challenge of just doing one thing every day, one small thing in an area you might feel a little weak in, do it for 90 days as best as you can and see where you are at the end of that, because that will give yourself some confidence in who you are and that you can keep your commitment to yourself. And that will then reflect in that confidence, your ability to be vulnerable and have the hard conversations and be a safe place for yourself and a safe place for your spouse as well. All right, let's go on to our marriage myth buster. All right, this one's an interesting one. This one came from, I believe, our audience. But affairs are the main cause of divorce. Mark, what's going on with this one?
Okay, I'm actually going to say that this is true in some ways, but I want to explain it. So some statistics about affairs and divorce. So the numbers, you know, it varies from source to source. And this is, if you really kind of have the ability to nerd out on statistics and, like, how they're formed, you can kind of understand why. If you're pulling different groups, if you word questions differently, it really changes the statistics on things. But when I looked it up in several different places, infidelity, it seems, is affecting about 20% of marriages, which means that roughly, if you take, you know, several couples, probably like two or three couples, one of them has probably dealt with infidelity at some point, which is, I mean, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, the percentage of divorces that are because, where infidelity is the main cause of divorce, it's sitting roughly at around 27%, which is actually the leading cause. So affairs are the main cause of divorce? Yes, true. Now, we also, though, know that it's very rare for a couple other things. It's very rare for the divorced spouse to marry their affair partner. When, you know, I looked at a few different numbers, the highest number I saw was about 5%. I saw 4%. I saw 3%. So the amount of times that, like, where people are taking that affair and really committing to it, it's not very high. And then on top of that, those affairs tend to have a really poor outcomes, as in usually about an 80% rate of divorce after, you know, if they do end up getting married. Now, other things to consider here is that if you do want to fight it out and actually, do something about it, about 60 to 65% of marriages actually do survive infidelity. So I'm giving all these numbers to give a complete picture here, because a lot of people say, okay, my husband, my wife is having an affair, things are over. And they're going to go right off into the sunset with this new partner that they had, that they have, and there's nothing I can do about it because they're saying that it's just over. And what we've seen here is that's just not the case. Like the likelihood that an affair relationship develops into something healthy is very low. And there is a high ability to come back from this and actually have a happy relationship. We see this, Heather, like all the time. Like people who work through the relationship issues involving an affair, and oddly enough, end up being happier on the other end. Now we've seen this with clients. I've actually seen this with friends. I don't know. I can't remember how I came to the knowledge. Like somewhere, like it came out. Like some of my friends have had affairs, but they're all still, not well, not all of them, but the ones that did stay together, I would they tell me that they're even happier now. So the thing is, go ahead.
We've had many clients say that, the affair was like the hardest thing to ever go through, but it was actually the best thing. Why? Why would someone say that? Well, because it helped them uncover the issues that led up to the affair. They healed those things, so they didn't come back. And then they were healthier and stronger than before. And that's what we all have the choice to do in any challenge that we face. We can either let it defeat us, or we can come back better and stronger. So one more interesting statistic, okay, is that if you're, like once a cheater, always a cheater, right? So they are 30 to 60 time percent more likely to cheat on you again if they've cheated, right? But the interesting study also shows that if you've been cheated on, then you're three times more likely to be cheated on again. So why? Why is that, right? Because there's underlying issues and cycles and patterns and behaviors and thoughts and limiting beliefs that until we heal those things and develop that inner strength, that inner confidence, and the skills to have a happy, healthy relationship, they'll keep coming back. But Mark, that's a big thing to take on, right? It's a big thing to take on. It is. We're talking about like this is your Mount Everest, right, of your relationship. It's going to define whether it succeeds or not. It's going to define who you are and how you go forward and if you're going to become a better person through it. So marriages that are going to survive this, they need help to get through something that big.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree 100%. I would say the unifying factor in the relationships that do survive infidelity are the ones that really sit down and examine what happened. They're the ones that seek out the help that they need. I mean, we detailed this, and oh, it was like a four part, each part out an hour long like workshop a while back on affairs, like what's needed to actually come back from this. Which, makes me think like maybe we need to put that back out into the wild again. But anyways, yeah, you absolutely do need help to survive this sort of thing, because I will say also the unifying factor and the ones that don't survive the infidelity are the ones that don't really examine what happened. They just kind of brush things under the rug. They pretend as if things didn't happen, and they just try to pretend, they just kind of go on as if nothing happened. That's just, it's not going to work. And so you do need someone kind of stepping in there and saying, okay, come do this, talk about that. Otherwise your marriage is doomed. Yeah, it's just going to be, if you're going to have a whole pile of unaddressed issues, trust issues, unaddressed pain and insecurity, and that's just not something you want to deal with on your own.
Right. So you're either going to fall back into looking to external sources to try to meet your needs and repeat affairs, repeat trust issues, repeat victimhood. You're going to feel like everyone always hurts you and it's just, I can't trust anyone. And you're right, you won't be able to until you address these things that are going on underneath the surface. Most people, many people will not do that. But those that do, it changes them forever. So the choice is yours. Just put it kind of plain and simple there, with a lot of love, but we've seen it happen. And we know after working with so many thousands of people that that truth really is up to you. So you guys get to choose and we're here to help you every step of the way. So with that being said, Mark, how can people get some help if they're wanting help with this or helping restore trust?
Well, like I said, the next training, official training that's going to be coming out with our subscription material should be coming out within the next week. So if you're looking at specifically building trust, you're saying, how do I build trust? My spouse won't even talk to me. That's where you want to go. That's going to have some in-depth exercises and some tips, tricks. Well, we don't like to give tricks, but you get what I mean. We just talked about affairs. If you really need help with that, please go to our website, go to www.highthrivecoaching.com and go to the, it's going to be, I think it says apply, but so you can talk to one of our team members and get in touch with, one of us. So we can actually talk to you about what's going on and see how we can help. So next week, Heather, we're going to be talking about how to save your marriage without therapy. I do think that therapy is really good in many cases. I do know that sometimes there's a reluctant spouse who absolutely refuses to go. So we're going to talk about, things that we can do to actually make some really big improvements, even if you have someone who's really reluctant like that.
Yep. And we'll show you how what we do is actually radically different than therapy. So if you feel like you've already tried therapy or it's the only way, well, get prepared for what we do. And we'll share that with you a little bit more next week.
Great. Heather, great as always to talk with you. Things like this.
Thank you guys all. All right.
All right. See you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.